This is IRIB English Radio.
The Israeli Prime Minister has approved plans to invade the city of Rafah in the Gaza Strip, rejecting a new ceasefire proposal by Hamas. The Palestinian Islamic Jihad says the US is complicit in the Israeli onslaught on Gaza, calling Washington's limited aid delivery as an act of hypocrisy. And Hezbollah has warned Israel that the Lebanese resistance movement is prepared for any escalation of hostilities by the regime. Thank you for joining us. In today's top story, Israel's Prime Minister has rejected a new ceasefire proposal by the Hamas resistance movement that included the release of the regime's captives in exchange for the release of Palestinian abductees. Benjamin Netanyahu's office issued a statement following a war cabinet meeting in Tel Aviv. However, the statement said a delegation would leave for Qatar to discuss Israel's position on a potential agreement. It also said Netanyahu had approved plans for a military operation in Rafah, the southern Gaza city where more than a million people are sheltering. Earlier, Hamas said under this proposal, the occupying Israeli forces should leave Gaza. Hamas said his proposal also included the return of displaced Palestinians to their homes and providing them with aid. The exchange of Palestinian abductees with Israeli captives held in Gaza was included as well. The Israeli military has conducted new attacks on different locations across Gaza. Our correspondent in the central city of Deir al-Balah joined us earlier to give us the details. Let's take a listen.
In the meantime, the Israeli occupation artillery maintained its shelling towards the eastern part of several areas of Gaza Strip, particularly here in Deir al-Balah city and Al-Mughraga neighborhood, and even Al-Nusayrat refugee camp. Heavy artillery shelling reached those areas, and that shelling actually was maintained over the night. And even in Jabalia refugee camp and in Khan Yunis city, the Israeli artillery also maintained and continued their attacks and airstrikes. In the meantime, the central areas of Khan Yunis city and Jabalia refugee camp also were hit relentlessly by those Israeli continuous airstrikes. Several residential buildings destroyed over those cruel attacks.
A rare shipment of food aid has arrived at the Gaza Strip's coastline in a first after a move after more than 5 months of Israeli onslaught, which has pushed the territory to the brink of famine. The aid consists of more than 200 tons of food and water and is now being unloaded. The consignment has been sent by World Center Kitchen Charity with the help of Spanish aid group Open Arms. The group says a second aid package is also ready to sail to Gaza from Cyprus. The food is planned to be distributed in the nearly flattened northern Gaza. The United Nations has warned that a quarter of the population of the Gaza Strip faces starvation and the crisis is growing. That's amid persisting Israeli blockade on the territory. We've been holding an exclusive interview with the deputy leader of the Palestinian Islamic Jihad movement. In it, he details the latest ceasefire plan proposed by the resistance in Gaza, but casts doubt on Israeli willingness to reach a political settlement. Let's take a listen.
A new proposal was submitted, which divides the agreement, meaning that the first phase would begin, which includes the prisoner swap, and we agreed to add other elements to it, which would include a withdrawal from the Rashid Street and the Salah al-Din Square, which would allow for the return or guarantee the return of the displaced to their homes in the north of the Gaza Strip and Gaza City. The second phase, which includes the swap of the soldiers, which must include guarantees for an end of the war, an end to the aggression, and an end to the ceasefire. And the third phase would include pledges to begin the reconstruction of Gaza. We believe that the Israeli government, because it includes a number of members of the far right, will not respond, and it has maneuvered. There is maneuvering on the part of the Netanyahu government.
Hindi, however, said that such Israeli maneuvering will not lead anywhere because of Palestinian steadfastness. He said the resistance is carrying out operations in areas which Israel claims to have captured, including in the north of the Strip and in Khan Yunis to the south. The resistance official also highlighted the U.S. complicity in the Israeli genocide in Gaza.
In this aggression, there is American agreement with Israel. And the American administration is a complete accomplice with Israel, despite the crocodile tears which they are shedding. So the goals are to eliminate the resistance, and these are American-Israeli joint strategic goals. So the goals are the same, but there is a disagreement regarding the priorities. The Americans talk, for example, about sparing civilians, but the civilians are being killed with American weapons and bombs. And some of these weapons reach Israel even behind the back of the Congress.
Hindi described as an act of hypocrisy the U.S. delivery of limited aid to Gaza through airdrops and temporary seaports while delivering weapons to Israel. He said the U.S. is attempting to mislead the international conscience and buy time for Israel. Hindi also pointed to Israeli threats to invade the refugee-packed city of Rafah, describing them as meaningless given the large extent of Israeli losses and casualties elsewhere in Gaza, which he stressed the regime is concealing. Columnist and political analyst Saeed Shahabi tells us about the two major failures of Israel since its creation, despite committing all sorts of crimes and atrocities. Let's take a listen.
There are a few points here. Number one, Israel, after 75 years of occupation, has not secured its own security. For 75 years, there have been only wars, crimes, genocidal policies. They have been repeatedly criticized by international bodies. So on the security front, they have failed to achieve their own security. Despite what is said about their sophisticated security systems and sophisticated military hardware, they have failed. This is number one. Number two, when they waged the war on Hamas and on Palestinians in the last 4 months since October the 9th, when they started their operations against the Palestinians, they declared and they said that our aim is to destroy and demolish the resistance movement, especially Hamas. But now, after 4 months or almost five months, they have failed to do it. They have not been able to defeat the resistance movement. And this is what happened in the last, as I said, 75 years. They have never been able to defeat the resistance movement. On the other hand, they have been bombing the citizens, the ordinary civilians in Gaza, sometimes in Jerusalem.
Meanwhile, ground fighting rages on across the Gaza Strip, with Palestinian resistance fighters repelling attacks by Israeli forces. The military wing of the Hamas resistance movement, the Al-Qassam Brigades, says it has killed four Israeli soldiers in central Gaza. The group says the regime's troops were targeted while moving explosive devices to a building in the Al-Zahra municipality. In a separate operation there, Al-Qassam fighters carried out rocket attacks against five Israeli Merkava tanks. The Al-Quds Brigades also launched mortar shells at a gathering of regime soldiers. Israel says it has lost 250 of its troops since the regime's ground invasion of Gaza began in late October. Palestinian groups, however, say the actual number of regime's casualties is much higher and Israel is hiding it to avoid public anger. The Hezbollah resistance movement warns it is prepared for expansion of hostilities with the Israeli regime if necessary. Hezbollah made the comment in a statement shortly after it responded to a series of Israeli attacks on its positions in southern Lebanon. The movement said it targeted the regime's military bases and gatherings of soldiers with rockets and missiles. Hezbollah and Israel have been exchanging fire across Lebanon's southern border since the regime launched its onslaught on Gaza in early October. Meanwhile, Israel continues with its deadly attacks on southern Lebanon amid tensions with the Lebanese resistance movement Hezbollah. Our correspondent in Beirut, Maryam Saleh, joined us earlier for an update on the latest developments.
That there was heavy shelling from the Israeli side, and we're seeing an increased amount of air shelling, more than artillery fire, which was basically the norm in the beginning of the confrontations. Now you have a lot of shelling on the outskirts of several villages, like Al-Mashab, like Ramia, for example, but you have certain towns like Meis Jabal and Kfar Kila, for example, where you have a lot of residential areas have been completely turned into rubble. And despite that, you see, and we noticed, you know, from our authorities that the Israelis seem to go and once again shell the same place, even if that residential area, certain residents or a group of houses or buildings were, like we said, completely demolished, the Israelis still once more target that same area. Analysts are saying that this is part of Israel's frustration and the fact that they do not have enough data when it comes to their targeting. Hezbollah's fire has also reached the Israeli posts in several areas. We also know that Hezbollah has been attempting to target Israeli soldiers whenever they spot them. We know that there was a group of soldiers in the vicinity of the Birkat Risha post, and Hezbollah said it targeted that group of soldiers by a Burkan rocket.
Another week of pro-Palestinian rallies in Yemen. Huge crowds of demonstrators once again took to the streets across the country to condemn the U.S.-Israeli genocide in Gaza and urge the Yemeni army to continue its operations against Israel. For more details, our correspondent Abdul Latif Awashali joined us earlier from the site of the rally in the capital, Sana'a.
Despite the sunny and hot weather, the people here, and also despite they're being fasting today, you know, it's Ramadan, but the people have chosen to gather here. You know, they came from across the city to gather in the capital, Sana'a, and also in other cities to express their solidarity with the Palestinian people. They said they can't just remain passive while witnessing the oppressed people of Palestine suffer from killings and being starved to death by at the hands of the Israeli regime. They have to do something. They have to demonstrate. They have to keep provoking the Yemeni army to escalate its operations in the Red Sea and Gulf of Aden. And today we've seen them being happy after hearing the speech of Sayyid Abdul Malik al-Houthi yesterday, saying that the naval operations now will be escalated and now they will target the Israeli linked ships, not only in the Red Sea and Bab al-Mandab Strait, but also in the Indian Ocean and in the South Africa. The people today are very happy. They said they will keep telling the Yemeni army and urging the Yemeni army to keep escalating its operations.
The Yemeni army says it has carried out fresh attacks on U.S. and Israeli vessels in the Indian Ocean as it expands the scope of its pro-Palestinian and retaliatory operations.
Another victory for the oppressed Palestinian people and in retaliation for the American-British aggression against our country. The naval units of the Yemeni armed forces carried out an operation targeting the Israeli ship Pacific 01 in the Red Sea with a number of suitable naval missiles. Meanwhile, our forces carried out an operation targeting an American destroyer in the Red Sea with a number of drones and successfully achieved its objectives. In implementing the directives of our leader, Sayyid Abdul Malik Badruddin al-Houthi, in another victory for the oppressed Palestinian people who are being subjected to aggression and siege in the Gaza Strip, and in response to the calls of the Yemeni people and all the free people of the nation, the Yemeni armed forces began to expand the scope of their operations against Israeli ships, those linked to Israel or those heading to the ports of occupied Palestine, to include the Indian Ocean to the Cape of Good Hope. Accordingly, the Yemeni armed forces warn all Israeli ships heading to or coming from the ports of occupied Palestine not to pass through the Cape of Good Hope. Otherwise, they will be a legitimate target for our armed forces. The Yemeni armed forces, within the framework of implementing these directives, carried out three operations against three Israeli and American ships in the Indian Ocean, using a number of suitable naval missiles and drones, and all three operations successfully achieved their objectives. The Yemeni armed forces will persist with their military operations, enforcing a blockade on Israeli navigation in the Red and Arabian Seas, as well as the Indian Ocean, until a ceasefire is achieved and the siege on Gaza is lifted.
Iran's foreign minister has called for a united endeavor by the Muslim world against Islamophobia. In an online post on X, Hossein Amir Abdullahian said the aim should be creating an effective deterrence against seditious moves that are opposed to lasting peace and security. The top diplomat added that hegemonic powers are doing everything to distort the image of Islam before the world public opinion and depict it as a threat. Amir Abdullahian describes such policies as a plot, stressing that Islam has always promoted peace and mutual respect amongst different people and religions. He made the comments on the occasion of the International Day to Combat Islamophobia, which is marked on March 15th. The International Court of Justice says it will hold hearings in Nicaragua's case against Germany for aiding Israel in its genocidal war on Gaza. The World Court said the hearings will take place on April the 8th and 9th. According to Nicaragua, Germany is violating the 1948 Genocide Convention and the 1949 Geneva Conventions on the laws of war in the occupied Palestinian territories. Earlier this month, Nicaragua asked the ICJ to issue emergency measures requiring Berlin to stop military aid to Israel and reverse its decision to stop funding UNRWA. Well, that's it for this hour's bulletin. Take care for now.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
Palestinians abducted by Israeli regime forces since the start of the war are returning to Gaza with harrowing accounts of mock executions, constant beatings, and humiliating mistreatment. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for the third part, please. Middle East I wrote, Omar Mahmoud Abdulqader Samud had also been forced to seek refuge in a school with memories of his family after their house was destroyed by an air strike on November 14th. After several weeks, Israeli regime troops came to the school and abducted Samud, his wife, and their children, including their two-year-old son. Samud said, "They handcuffed us and blindfolded us and took us to a nearby hill. Tanks were roaming around us, creating a deadly scene of horror and fear. In those moments, you think you will die 1,000 times. Samud said he remained blindfolded and handcuffed for the entire 42 days of his detention, barely being given enough food to survive. He said, "The soldiers forced us to kneel for 24 hours. They would storm into the barracks where we were kept as hostages, make a lot of noise with their iron bars, kicking and breaking everything. The temperature was freezing as the cell was made of iron, very similar to cages used for animals. The troops' aim was to torture us, to break us, to show us who is the boss, and that our lives depended on them. Prisoners who raised their heads risk being sent to the ghost room, Samud said. He said, "You become a ghost, unseen and unheard. They tie your hands and legs, forbid you from going to the bathroom. They deny you water and food and leave you like this for a few days." Another room was also known as disco, Samud recalled. A troop dragged me on the floor, handcuffed, and placed me on a piece of rug. The troops sprayed freezing cold water on me and placed a fan in front of me. They would leave me for a few days without food or water or the possibility to get up and go to the bathroom. I urinated on myself and pleaded for mercy, but they didn't care. The troops would kick me on all parts of my body. Imagine yourself handcuffed on the floor with five or six troops kicking you, with their boots hitting you with weapons and bats. He said, then they asked me to sit up. How could I possibly sit up? When I couldn't follow the orders, they would beat me even harder. They completely smashed me. I thought this nightmare would never end. Sometimes the Zionist regime troops would unleash dogs on the captive men as they were forced to lie face down on the ground, still handcuffed and blindfolded. Samud said, the Zionist regime troops would close the door and let the dogs torture us for next 2 or 3 hours. During interrogations, the abductees were restrained in their chairs by clamps on their arms and their legs. Sometimes these sessions would last from 9 a.m. until midnight. And in one of these, Samud said his toes had been broken. He said, part of the torture technique was breaking the clamps while they are still on your legs. The interrogator came to remove them, but they started banging on them so fiercely that I cried out in pain. My toes were breaking, but he kept on banging them. The pain was unbearable, he said. They left me like that, my toes broken and bloodied for 20 days, lying around like a rug. I lost over 25 kilos while being held hostage, and I cannot walk because of the torture. Ali Nayef Muhammad Al-Masri, 34, was among a group of men rounded up during a night raid by the Zionist regime forces in the northern West Bank city of Qalqilya in January. Masri, who is from Gaza, and the other men had previously been working in the occupied territories, but had been displaced to Qalqilya when their work permits were withdrawn at the start of the war. Following an army raid on the building where they were staying, the men were blindfolded, handcuffed, and dragged to a space alongside the fence separating the West Bank from the occupied territories. Masri said they kept us there for about a month. We were workers, but there were also sick people there, people with cancer. Some of them were elderly, also were brutalized, tortured, and humiliated. There were no regard for human life. One day, Masri was among 10 men separated by the Zionist regime troops from the rest of the detainees. The men were made to strip and kneel by the fence. He said, an army commander came and waged a psychological war against us. He shouted at his unit, kill them all, every single one of them. Then the troops started shooting and we heard live ammunition all around us. I had no idea if I was dead or alive. The men were then taken to a room for questioning. He said, the first question was, who do you know? and he showed me photos from my neighborhood. If he didn't like my answers, he would hang me by my arms, still handcuffed. My interrogation lasted for 10 days. At this time, I didn't know when it was day and when it was night. I was freezing all the time, freezing and handcuffed. Other times, Masri said his interrogator would burn cigarettes on his skin and kick him. He was made to sit on a chair that delivered electric shocks and was prevented from sleeping. He said, "The troops under commander were monsters. When I asked for water, the troop would laugh, go to the corner, urinate in a plastic bottle and bring it to me to drink. When I refused, he would drop the whole thing on me." After several weeks, Masri and other men were handcuffed and blindfolded, put on an army truck, and driven for 6 hours to Karam Abu Salem crossing. He said, "Before they released us, they undressed us again and took our clothes. When they dropped us off there, there were 55 male detainees and 6 female detainees. They made us walk north, and after walking a long distance, the troops started shooting at us. Later, we learned that the 6 women had been kidnapped from inside Gaza and were held hostage for 3 months. We didn't know anything about them."
IRIB English Radio presents
Viewpoints.
The presence of different scholars.
And God said, "Let there be light," and there was light.
The Creator made Adam in his image, then placed the world in his care. May you walk alongside the Creator in righteousness.
God of Abraham, take my child into thy hands, that he may live to thy service.
God has spoken to us before, through Abraham, Noah, Moses, and through Jesus Christ. Why should we be so surprised that God speaks to us now through Muhammad?
Viewpoint.
A critique of movies with religious themes on IRIB English Radio.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, in the name of God, welcome to another edition of the program, Viewpoint, the movie critique program on IRIB English Radio, whereby we try to criticize movies with religious, spiritual, and metaphysical themes. For that, I've invited Sayyid Abdullah and Brother Yasser again to the studio to help me criticize the movie Astral, produced in 2018, directed by Chris Mall. Sayyid Abdullah, assalamu alaikum, and welcome to the program.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah, thank you for having me.
You're welcome. And Brother Yasser, assalamu alaikum, and welcome to the studio again.
Alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah, it was a pleasure to be with you, Brother Muhammad Jawad.
You're welcome. Well, you know, from the last 2 episodes ago, we tried to criticize the movie Astral, directed by Chris Mall, produced in 2018, which is a British horror film, actually. With you know, Alex as his major character, you know, played by Frank Delane, of course. Before me asking any questions about this movie or the theme about this movie, let's take a listen to a short part of this movie, and then we'll be back. Don't go away.
I can't really tell you how to do it. I can only describe how I did it.
Find somewhere comfortable. Rest your eyes. Concentrate on your breathing. You are connected to all that exists. I am empowered to travel wherever I wish to go.
So, astral projection allows you to contact
I don't think you should be messing around with that.
Why exactly you want to try?
Back to the program, Viewpoint, the movie critique program on RIB English Radio with me, Mohammad Jawad, hosting this program, and my guest speakers, Syed Abdullah and Brother Yasser. The movie we are trying to criticize is called Astral. It stands for Astral Projection. It was produced in 2018, and it was directed by Chris Small. Well, the story is about a student of metaphysics who, you know, tries or learns about astral projection or the scientific premise of AP, and then tries to practice this or enter another realm to see, you know, his deceased mother, but he faces the consequences. Brother Yasser, what does or how does Alex's experience with astral projection affect his mental health and perception of reality?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Well, as the movie clearly shows, that he becomes very stressful. He starts seeing things. He starts doubting.
Yes.
I mean, in the beginning of the movie, it showed that... I mean, you spoke about in one of a few programs before about people born with this kind of disposition.
Mm-hmm.
It's possible we have this kind of thing, that people are born with certain skill sets or a certain gifts, as you want to call it.
Yes.
In the way that he drew a particular picture by seeing a particular being. And the reason for his mother's death and so on and so forth may have played on him. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of different things affecting him. But yes. I think the movie itself then shows that, you know, this is not something that should be practiced. Even in the Islamic teachings and stuff, generally, these things are not, you know, persuaded to do. They're actually dissuaded to don't do it because of the damages it can do, the potential damages.
For the general public.
For anybody, even the person who's doing it.
But somebody who's talented to do so.
Doesn't matter. Just because you're talented to do it doesn't mean you have to do it. On basis.
But if they can, for example, find out what the other realms has for them or have for them. Like what Sayyid Abdullah was
like, for example, at the end of the day, the Sharia gives you a certain way of life to go about. Going to in another realm is going to do what for you in terms of Sharia? Is it going to make you pray your namaz better? No. Very unlikely.
If you find out, for example, there are different realms of existence, like the afterlife,
Because again, if the astral realm is just still a physical realm, you're not going to the afterlife.
If they are leaving the physical realm.
But again, that's going to the barzakh realm. And that is not everybody can do that.
Yeah, not everybody, but those...
Very few people
I'm talking
that.
About those select few.
Even then, when they come back, they don't tell anybody anything.
Some of them say...
Because one of the principles of a true mystic is that he doesn't tell anybody anything. It's a truth. If a person comes and starts blabbering...
Yes, but they are sometimes permitted to divulge or disclose a little information to other people.
By who? Who's given that permission? Who's given that permission? The nafs, which again is nafs al-ammara, which is the evil nafs. Who gave the permission?
I don't know.
Exactly.
I haven't experienced that. But
exactly.
The thing
in Irfanic teachings, there's always this teacher-student relationship. If a person does something like that without a teacher, know something is wrong.
Yes.
Know that there is something devilish in it and evil in it. Like I mentioned previously, that person can be manipulated.
Mm-hmm. True.
Shaitan is easy.
True. Indeed.
That person can be used to say something that he did not see or say it in a way that seems so believable that other people can get confused.
True indeed. Thank you. Thank you very much. Let's take a short break by listening to another part of the movie Astral, produced in 2018, directed by Chris Small. And then we'll be back and continue our program, Viewpoint, on RIB English Radio. Don't go away.
Astral attempt number 2.
It doesn't make any sense.
Surely you can't record your own spirit.
It felt like a dream, but it was so real.
Don't believe everything you're about to see.
Ab insidious diaboli, libera nos domine, et ecclesiam tuam secura tibi fortius, libertate sedere. Ab with the Father, and the Holy Spirit!
You brought something here with you.
Back to the program, Viewpoint, the movie critique program. on RIB English Radio. This is Muhammad Jawad hosting this program, and Sayyid Abdullah and Brother Yasser, my guest speakers, helping me criticize the movie Astral, produced in 2018, directed by Chris Mall. Sayyid Abdullah, what's the nature of the entities Alex, the major character in this movie, encounters in the astral plane? Can we say that was demon, or at least of demonic nature?
According to the lady that they went to see, who supposedly knows about these things,
yes,
which they found her book and they went to her house, she said that, if I remember correctly, that in the Bible it was referred to as demons, and she said in the Quran they referred to as jinn.
Mm-hmm.
Or something like the Quran definitely said in the Quran it's referred to as jinn, but in the Bible I can't remember if she said
fallen
exactly. Angels or demons.
Yeah, yeah.
So these are the entity. At the end of the day, you call them jinns or demons, they are the same entities. So the name might differ, but the entity is the same. Each culture, each language might have a different name for it.
Yeah.
But these are entities that are, we know they do exist, from at least from an Islamic perspective. We do know that jinn exist. They have their own bodies. They have their own realm. They have their own, and whatever makes them, right? They are invisible to us. But are they in the same way that the movie was trying to project, that they are like demonic in their nature and they're just trying to attack you? I'm not sure. I've never heard of that, because they have their own business to deal with. They're not interested in human beings, unless someone forces them to, through black magic or whatever. But generally speaking, they're not there to harm you. They, you know. And
but when you leave your body, I mean, like when you, you know, get rid of the limitations which yeah. exist on this physical level,
yeah.
Then you'll, or you may face different entities or life forms out
so
there.
So definitely that is true.
Like
so,
the story that is being actually reported, like it's in the Quran, that they were like, you know, attacked by the shooting stars. Like
yeah.
God actually made it happen so that they couldn't eavesdrop,
yeah.
right?
Yeah. Now, so I suppose, because if you are able to extract yourself from your body, then obviously things will be different. As the Quran says, فَكَشَفْنَا عَنْكَ غَطَاءَكَ وَزَرَكَ الْيَوْمَ حَدِيدٌ. So once you leave the limitation of the body, then your sight will see more. So you might see jinn, you might see angels, you might
yes.
see people who are actually also astral projecting themselves.
Yes.
But what the movie was also trying to highlight a point, which is very important, is that if you do leave your body becomes vulnerable
mm-hmm.
to other entities getting inside it. And that's why the lady emphasized on doing the blessings. And even the guy himself, when he was trying it, he had to do prayers and he blessed himself mm-hmm. and blessed his body.
Right.
So you need to bless yourself before you leave, so at least you protect it from being invaded by other entities, whether mm-hmm. jinns or demons.
Thank you very much, Sayyid Abdullah. Let's take a short break by listening to a part of the movie Astral, produced in 2018, directed by Chris Mall. And then we'll be back and continue our program, Viewpoint, on RIB English Radio. Stay with us.
There were spirits surrounding you, looking for a way in.
You saw them?
Yes. And our only choice is to banish them. There is one more powerful than the others. It seeks only destruction, and it won't stop until it gets what it wants. We need its name.
Why?
Most religions have names for them. The Bible refers to them as demons, spirits, and fallen angels, though I use the term loosely. The Quran refers to these spirits as jinn, a spirit from an unseen dimension. Alex, you'll have to do as you did before.
Project?
Yes.
No. No, 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 no. No, that's what started this. It's going to make it worse.
Back to the program Viewpoint, the movie critique program on RIB English Radio, in which we try to criticize the movie Astral, directed by Chris Mall, produced in 2018. A British horror film with my guest speaker, Sayyid Abdullah, and Brother Yasser. Brother Yasser, what's the overall message that the film, or this movie, Astral, is trying to convey about the astral projection and also the afterlife?
I don't think it's trying to show the possible dangers of something like this happening. Mm-hmm. One, showing that there are other entities that exist.
Yes.
Maybe at the end with that particular lady who brings about these charms and these prayers, the importance of prayer, the importance of religion to a certain extent, or religious teachings which may be taken from it. That's some of the positive things you can take from it. Mm-hmm. Other than that, I don't really know what else you can take from the
What about the challenges and the risk which exist or that goes actually with the territory of AP?
Like, for example, astral projection or out-of-body experience, maybe, like, for example, does it create a hole for other beings to come through? I don't believe that, because at the end of the day, the realms of existence are already intertwined. So, for example, just because one person decides to do something or has the ability to have an out-of-body experience, does it create a rift in the realms for something else to enter? No, I don't believe this, because if the realms are already intertwined, there's already interaction between the realms. And if the realms have a vertical and causal relationship, then it doesn't really matter what you do. And again, as we even said, that even if astral projection is leaving the physical realm, we have no proof that it does.
Yeah.
It's just manipulating time and space to a very minimal and small level. Even then, we don't even know if the person is even experiencing it truly, because at the end of the day, a presential experience that a person, him or herself, feels is something specific to that person. If someone, and then that person then tells you, this is what happened to me, okay, fine. I cannot just deny it, but I can also not just accept it.
Exactly.
That person may have felt it. I don't know that. But anyway, that person is not infallible.
It's like the authority of the dreams, which is authority to the dreamer.
Exactly. But even then, if you look at dreams themselves, there are certain dreams that 98% of dreams have no meaning whatsoever to them.
Yeah, true.
To the majority of people.
They are as ghosts.
Yeah, right? They don't have anything. But there are certain dreams that carry messages. And that's for a specific person who will then understand that their dream is carrying a message. The same here.
Yeah.
If a normal person who has no understanding, this happens to them, doesn't have a clue what is happening to them.
Right.
Just, you know, all of a sudden, okay, I had a wonderful experience. Okay, so what? Does it benefit you? It doesn't benefit you unless it takes you closer to God. If it doesn't take you closer to God, it actually takes you further away from God, and it makes you do other things, then that's definitely satanic.
Yeah.
As the devils and the demons and the shayateen can do this.
I think this is a very good cornerstone, right? It's a good standard to differentiate between the satanic, the demonic, or angelic and divine kind of experience, right? If any kind of ritual or practice that makes you closer to God, then we can call it divine, right? Or something which
you can kind of generally group it like this. Yeah. At the end of the day, you could say that again, but that will only come with time. Again, time in the physical realm, obviously, the acts of the person, the demeanor of the person. There are many people who have gone down this path, in the true path of spirituality and mysticism.
Yes.
And they were big scholars, and they went astray. They became engrossed with things that they shouldn't have been engrossed with.
They didn't end up in good.
I mean, Shaitan has been there since the very beginning of creation.
Right.
Even before then, before man's creation. Again, this is not something that is set in time.
Yes.
But he knows man and will try everything to obviously do what he has to do to deviate man from that right path. Even the biggest of scholars have fallen into his trap.
Okay, thank you very much. Thank you, Brother Yasser, and thank you very much, Sayyid Abdullah, for your nice contribution and the answers you provided to my questions in this program, Viewpoint, the movie critique program on RIB English Radio, in which we try to criticize the movie Astral, directed by Chris Mall, produced in 2018. Thank you very much for listening to us. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah wa barakatuh.
Begin by getting into a comfortable seated position. When you're ready, softly close your eyes. tune in to your heart in the middle of your chest and a couple of inches inwards. And let all of your awareness center in on this space. Wiggle your fingers and your toes. And when you're ready, open your eyes back to the world around you.
Follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/parstodayen. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/parstodayenglish.
The Limelight.
The former British Prime Minister Gordon Brown has said Britain is in the throes of a hidden poverty epidemic, with the worst affected households living in squalor and going without food, heating, and everyday basics. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. British newspaper The Guardian has covered this story and tells us more. According to new food insecurity data, millions of people, including one in five families with children, have gone hungry or skipped meals in recent weeks because they could not regularly afford to buy groceries. According to the Food Foundation tracker, 15% of British households, equivalent to approximately 8 million adults and 3 million children, experienced food insecurity in the month of January, as high food prices continued to hit the pockets of low-income families. Experts warned the persistence of high levels of food insecurity among low-income families was a health emergency that would drive the prevalence of conditions linked to poor nutrition, such as malnutrition and rickets. Nearly two-thirds or 60% of food insecure households reported buying less fruit, and 44% bought fewer vegetables as they struggled with the ongoing cost of living crisis in Britain. By contrast, just 11% of food secure households bought less fruit and 6% purchased fewer vegetables. Although the Foundation has previously reported the amount of vegetables bought by British households has fallen to a 50-year low, the latest tracker data shows the situation is far worse for low-income families. citing Guardian revelations that the National Health Service has recorded an increase in hospital admissions for nutrient deficiency. The foundation said falling fruit and vegetable consumption among the poorest people in Britain was likely to widen health inequalities and put added strain on the National Health Service. The foundation said, although inflation had decreased in recent months, food prices remained high. It said the price of a reasonably costed, adequately nutritious weekly basket of food has increased by 24 to 26% in the past 2 years. Food insecurity levels, based on a regular Food Foundation survey of more than 6,000 people, have fallen slightly from 17.5% in January of 2023, but remain as high as they were in the chaotic first weeks of the pandemic in 2020. The foundation said the ongoing cost of living crisis meant food insecurity had become, in effect, the norm for many people in Britain. Millions of low-income families in Britain being unable to afford to access regular and healthy food has focused attention on the inadequacy of social security support in Britain. According to the Food Foundation's latest data, 45% of households in receipt of universal credit, the main low-income benefit, reported experiencing food insecurity. The foundation said all children in families on universal credit should be automatically entitled to free school meals. There is increasing concern that from April, the government will discontinue the Household Support Fund, a £900 million a year hardship fund administered by English councils and widely used to fund school holiday meal vouchers for families with children on free school meals. Michael Marmot, a public health expert and professor of epidemiology at University College London, said, "There are fewer needs more basic than nutritious food for you and your children. In Britain, in 2024, one in five households with children cannot meet that basic need. They are simply too poor, and the poorer they are, the less likely they are to be able to meet that need." A government spokesperson claimed, "We recognise the pressures people are facing, which is why we are providing £104 billion in cost of living support, worth on average £3,700 per household, while our healthy food schemes are helping more than 3 million children." But Henry Dimbleby, a former government food advisor and the author of 2021 National Food Strategy, called the latest statistics a health emergency that would cast a long shadow on public health. The website Reddit has also covered the same story and tells us more. The former British Prime Minister Gordon Brown has said Britain is in the throes of a hidden poverty epidemic, with the worst affected households living in squalor and going without food, heating and everyday basics such as clean clothes and toothpaste. Gordon Brown charged the Conservative government with creating a wall of silence around obscene levels of destitution in the United Kingdom, and criticised ministers for systematically shredding a social security system that had once provided a safety net for the poorest people in Britain. Gordon Brown said it was a moral outrage that the government was unwilling to tackle a social emergency that had created millions of forgotten and voiceless victims, one he compared in an article for The Guardian with the post office scandal in terms of the scale of ministerial neglect. Gordon Brown said, "In years to come, I believe people will be asking how it was that government walked by on the other side when thousands of children were suffering abject deprivation and failed to support them in their hours of need. He described the poverty he had witnessed in his hometown of Kirkcaldy in Scotland, where 70% of children were in poverty in some neighbourhoods, as the worst he had seen in his lifetime. He said in a recent interview, "In 2010, we were helping 100 children at Christmas through charity schemes. Last Christmas, it was 1,800. He described Britain as haunted by poverty we thought had been consigned to history. He said the situation was deteriorating for destitute families whose children lacked proper clothing or had to share beds, whose parents felt shame because they could not provide and feared their children would be taken into care as a result. Gordon Brown challenged Britain's Chancellor of the Exchequer, Jeremy Hunt, to use his March budget to address the suffering of families for whom 2024 was shaping up to be financially the worst year in living memory. He said, in an advanced economy, understanding these privations shouldn't be a question of ideology, but a question of decency. Gordon Brown called on Jeremy Hunt to undertake a root and branch review of universal credit and extend the government's £900 million cost of living crisis household support fund, currently at risk of being axed from next April. The fund provides emergency help such as food vouchers, beds and cookers to struggling families. Brown's comments came as he published a review of UK hardship on behalf of his multi-bank project, a network of local charities developed out of the office of Gordon and Sarah Brown, which sources and distributes millions of surplus goods to families in need. The review predicts the current crisis, the cost of living crisis, is the phrase, but the cost of staying alive crisis might be a better description, will continue for many households because food and fuel prices remain high and universal credit levels are far too low to meet rising bills. As a Chancellor and then Prime Minister in Labour governments between 1997 and 2010, Gordon Brown oversaw plans that significantly reduced levels of UK poverty through spending on tax credits and social programmes, such as the minimum wage and Sure Start. The subsequent huge cuts to welfare spending under Coalition and Tory governments from 2010 led to a collapse in benefit levels and an explosion in severe poverty. In 2022, an estimated 1 million children experienced destitution in Britain, meaning their families were unable to afford to properly feed, clothe, or clean them, or keep them warm.
Iranian news, Iranian culture, Iranian voice. This is IRIB English Radio. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.